part two.
And we have to apologize for that dreadful version of That's the Kind of Magic.
That was by Queen, though.
Was it?
Yeah, it was the Highlander 2 mix.
How apropos! Somebody plug your headphones back in.
I will.
Yeah.
Okay. Because we're getting feedback. There we go. Thank you, Sonic, for being so good at what you do.
But not for choosing that tune.
Yeah. Wicked cool.
Well, never mind. Moving on. Did anyone see the footage from the Olympics when they were running the flame through the shanty towns and they were chucking water balloons at them and stuff like that?
No.
The protesters were chucking buckets of water at the flame as it was going by, and the police were having to sort of jump in the way of the buckets of water and the flower. So it was really funny. And a couple of the people who were running the torch got like tripped up as well, and which wasn't that funny, but it just highlights what the Olympics are all about. I'm sure we were talking about this 4 years ago when it was London's turn to sort of scam a city out of a lot of its money.
Well, they just steamroll her in, don't they?
Yeah, they just boulder in, take it.
Just like a huge organisation of them, their own, and yeah. They just literally take over. Don't they actually have like jurisdiction in that area? Didn't we talk about that, Nick, last
probably
when we had the Olympics here?
Yeah, they just take over the place for a couple of years and then make them put down like infrastructures and sort of all sorts of things, then just bugger off and say, right, yeah, pay your bill. And
clean that up.
Yeah. I thought it was quite funny that
they dismantle one of the, a lot of it, don't they, as well?
Yeah, they build it and then they dismantle it.
Well, they've got to leave some kind of light. And so it's quite strange the way that this legacy has been, this games has been portrayed as the Green Games. Because for every athlete that's at the place, they've given them a fucking seed to plant. So they're going to replant the rainforest. Yeah, right. So that some fucker can cut it down in 200 years' time.
Is that,
for logs.
Is that to grow more Zika mosquitoes?
Yeah.
Thank you for setting up that one. Got a bong?
Here we go. Bong.
Headline. First baby with Zika-related microcephaly born in New York City. First, as a quick briefing for anyone unfamiliar with the medical term microcephaly. Micro means small. Cephaly, C-E-P-H-A-L-Y, means of, on, or involving the head. Not the skull, not the brain, the entirety of the head. Okay? Once upon a time, now microcephaly has been around a very long time. Back in the old days, they used to call people born with this pinheads. You might remember Zippy the Pinhead. Zippy had microcephaly. That's why his head looked like that. Okay. And that's been around for hundreds of years, long before the word Zika was ever heard or patented by the Rockefeller Foundation. All right. A baby with Zika-related microcephaly has been born at a New York City hospital, marking the first such delivery in the five boroughs, according to health officials. The baby's mother was infected while in an area known to have mosquitoes transmitting the virus, the health department said. She and the baby, who's been diagnosed with a smaller than normal head and other brain problems, are being monitored by physicians, according to authorities. The baby did test positive for Zika, and the health department said it is working closely with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention on the case. According to the CDC, 12 babies have been born in the U.S. with Zika-related birth defects, including one in New Jersey. Some babies with no immediate signs of problems have also been born in the U.S. to Zika-infected mothers. Herminia Palaccia, deputy mayor for Health and Human Services, said the city's been preparing for a case for months, quote, and we stand ready to help families caring for an infant with microcephaly. This is a sad reminder that Zika can have tragic consequences for pregnant women, end quote. Earlier this week, health officials said physicians have requested testing for more than 2,000 pregnant women who have traveled to areas where there are active Zika mosquitoes. 41 of them have tested positive. Pregnant women also continue to be tested for Zika if their sexual partners have traveled to an affected area. Virtually all of South and Central America and the Caribbean is considered a hotbed for transmission of the virus. In addition to sexual contact, the virus is spread through specific species of mosquitoes. The mosquito species commonly associated with Zika's spread is not found in the tri-state area, but a similar species that science think could transmit the disease inhabits our area. New York City health officials have said they've been monitoring populations of the insect and applying pesticides to keep the mosquito-borne diseases at bay. The end. Now, kindly allow this Swami to point out, at every point in this story, they say, you got to pay attention to the specific words, Zika-related microcephaly, which means Zika did not cause it.
Yeah, yeah.
Zika itself is a pretty innocuous virus that 90% of the people, if you get infected with Zika, you won't even have symptoms you can recognize. It's that weak. But the name and the way they're flogging this Zika scare, oh, pregnant women, oh, look at these baby pinheads, you know, I mean, they're not related, not at all. I'm sorry,
go ahead. Basically what you've just said there is absolutely spot on, Swami, because what they're doing is they're trying to stop fucking people populating the planet.
Yes!
I would urge people to go and watch the UK column, which was broadcast on the 25th of July this year. With Dr. Graham Downing, absolutely spot on bit of research this guy's done. It's absolutely fabulous. I would urge people, we should put that in the show notes, actually, Nick. Because watch that. That is a stunning fucking bit of research this guy's done, and it all ties into what Swami's. It all ties into what you've just said, Swami. And, the whole lot.
Yeah.
It all ties in with Agenda 21 as well.
And Agenda 20, 31, whatever.
Interesting.
All of them.
Don't you find it interesting that this Zika hyperbole has come about when it's the Rio Games and Rio, that was where they had the first Earth Summit.
Well, and it's where the first microcephaly babies were discovered.
Or
acknowledged.
Surely that's a condition that arises, you know, without the...
The straight dough, yes, because there's a larvicide that was placed in the drinking water in that area that was the result, that was what caused these increased incidences of microcephaly. had nothing to do with the skeeters flying around biting people. They put a poison into the water system, and it affected the babies.
So, this is long-term planning here. Yeah, we'll put this into the water supply to create this this problem. Then we have
then reaction, then solution. Yes. Well, kindly allow this Swami to dovetail. This one, fresh off the press yesterday. A bong, please. All right, my favorite part of the show. Okay. Headline. The FDA just greenlit releasing mutant Zika-killing mosquitoes in Florida. Our sci-fi future just got a whole lot closer to becoming a reality after the Food and Drug Administration gave the okay to a field trial that would release genetically modified Zika-killing mosquitoes in the Florida Keys. On Friday, the FDA released a final environmental assessment of the trial, finding that, quote, it will not have significant impact on the environment, end quote. The project, led by Oxitec, a biotech company that focuses on insect control, calls for the release of thousands of genetically engineered male Aedes aegypti mosquitoes. The lab insects are bred so that over time they could kill off much of the local mosquito population by passing on a gene fatal to any offspring that they would create with wild females. This is not the last hurdle Oxitec faces in turning its dream of disease-obliterating mosquitoes into reality. The company will have to win the approval of the Florida Keys Mosquito Control District, which plans to vote on the proposal after issuing a survey testing local sentiment of Keys residents this fall. While past surveys have shown the project to have a majority of support, it has also had vocal naysayers. Some fear the environmental impacts that removing the mosquitoes, a non-native species, might have. Others have more imaginative objections, such as conspiracy theories about the project. Oxitec's mosquitoes are engineered to include two copies of the baby mosquito killing genes, overriding natural selection to make it almost certain their offspring received the killer gene from their fathers. Oxitec claims that trials in Brazil, Panama, and the Cayman Islands have reduced mosquito population by 90%, calling the success an unprecedented level of human control over nature. The World Health Organization, which has also studied using such tactics against disease, has stated that while the technology has demonstrated the ability to reduce the human mosquito population in small-scale field trials, a bit of a slip. That's the one. There is still an absence of data on epidemiological impact. The FDA's okay is a major step forward toward a U.S. implementation of the technology at a time of much concern over the spread of Zika in the U.S. after cases in Florida. Derek Nimmo, the senior scientist for Oxitec's Keys project, told me that in the coming months, much of his time will be spent going door to door in Key Haven, the area of the Keys, where he hopes to do the release. Nimmo's job now is to convince residents his project is the best chance at stopping the spread of Zika in the U.S. Quote, everywhere else where we've done this, there's been 90% or better control of the population. Now, see, he didn't stipulate mosquito there. If we can show that it's the same in Key Haven, it has a really good chance of being able to prevent Zika in Miami or wherever in the U.S. Oxitex mosquitoes, he said, is a solution that Key's residents don't realize they need yet. Luke Alfie, a co-founder of Oxitec and developer of the technology, who no longer works with the company, said he hopes Key's residents find the FDA's findings reassuring. Quote, they have looked carefully at the method and specifically at this trial and determined it is safe. I hope people who don't have the time and information to learn everything about it will take comfort in the fact that the FDA has the time and the information, and this is their conclusion. The Florida Keys Mosquito Control District spends $1 million a year fighting the Aedes aegypti species of mosquito, only succeeding in controlling 30 to 60% of the population with insecticide. While it's true that scientists can't be certain about the environmental impacts the trial will have, the methods currently being tested are unlikely to halt the spread of Zika. The end.
Well. I've got two words for that guy. Cane toad.
Yeah.
It's funny how everyone's getting bitten by mosquitoes and only getting Zika. Whatever happened to malaria?
Yeah.
What happened to West Niles?
Oh, West Nile. That's so 2005. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I know. I know.
So,
I just wanted to... Go on, Nick.
No, you go.
I was just going to say I've got a little bit lined up. Not really sure whereabouts it's going to start or where I'm going to end it, but just a little bit lined up from that UK column and program, just to give people a taster, because I think it really is definitely worth listening to.
Well, it's definitely so, worth a bong.
Okay. Well, mate, you can bong. Okay, so we're just going to listen to... a little clip from the UK column where they're talking about not genetic engineering, about genetic engineering, and about population control, and along Agenda 21 subjects. So let's just listen to this. Hold on a minute.
Have abortion or not, it's not about that. But what was interesting is, at this level, this is the Republican Party. Now, for them to have to be fighting against the selling of fetal body parts, then that means then they must know that fetal body parts are for sale. And there's a big market in this, and they call it fetal harvesting. The actual subject of how this is done is absolutely awful. I mean, it's demonic, quite frankly. And I won't get into it now, but maybe at some point we can discuss this. It will certainly put people off their lunch. We can talk about how this is commercialized and how these parts are acquired. But I found that so astonishing. And for Brian as well, when he was mentioned about some of the vaccination stuff, how dark some of this stuff can get. You really are entering the realms of darkness here. And this is a national party. I mean, at their level, they're recognizing it, and they're speaking out again and say they want laws against it, which shows you how big this industry must be. And as I said, I don't like it when you start commercializing the sale of body parts of babies. It is disgraceful.
And then the next thing that we seem to be making a commercial program is DNA testing to work out how Well, your children might do at school. This is the Daily Mail. Such tests are likely to meet resistance from privacy groups and teachers who will fear it could also be used to segregate children on the basis of their genetic makeup. This is eugenics, isn't it?
Yes, and this is the trend of where it's going. It's now we're talking about literally on the verge of being able to select children and say, look, well, at least what we think they might be more intelligent. And there's other ones I did send you. I'm not sure if you had a chance to put them up, which showed you that the IVF market was now booming. And there's another one by a doctor who was in the States who was offering first-rate gender selection. This is all going on now. And when you see this trend away from demonizing the natural birth, and we're all, there's too many of us, and we're all procreating too much, and then pushing towards this other thing, you kind of get a dichotomy here. Because, well, if there's a problem with fertility and we've got too many, then why they've got this booming industry and they're promoting it in such a positive way? And the reason it must be is because they must know, or they must be pushing for this to move from natural into the unnatural, into the technical and scientific way of having
children. Right, so here's the next one. The next great advance in fertility treatments may rest with 5 young monkeys in a lab outside of town. Each of the 5 carries genes from 3 parents instead of 2 because they were conceived using a novel and controversial gene therapy. Researchers are watching them closely to make sure they age normally, can reproduce, and have healthy children. If so, the 3-parent fertilization technique will likely be tried in humans. Where does this end?
Well, where does it end indeed? So that was just a little taster of the UK Column News programme from the 25th of July 2016, and I would really, really implore people to go and have a listen to that one.
It's
very interesting.
It's interesting. It's quite a dark subject that it goes into, though, isn't it?
Oh, completely.
Yeah, and how?
But I think they do it so well.
Yeah, and exactly how well and thought out it is. When he was, I think it's just before that part, he's talking about the population in certain areas of Britain and how where the majority are, indigenous Britons, the population is, the birth rate is going down, but where there's an influx of people that are not from this country, the population have gone up considerably. So it's, and with the use of, does he go talk about how like plastics and things, and certain chemicals have been in, we've been ingesting these this stuff for a considerable amount of time, and that has lowered
fertility lowering agents, I think he refers to them as. But did you see when the father goes into that episode, it actually shows you a picture of anyone who's familiar with Jan Irvin's stuff about a guy called Dr. Halland and Huxley. Halladine and
JBS Halladine
and Huxley. They're actually talking about, and this is in 1914. They're actually talking about, and they give a specific date.
They were in Oxford together.
They give a specific date as to when we'll be producing human beings with no mothers, and it's like we've seen fucking evidence from Israel about the womb, the artificial womb outside the woman's body.
Yeah, with
it's been in use.
Well, haven't they developed one to grow a goat embryo?
Well, they did actually start growing a human, but they had to stop it after 31 days because the law doesn't allow it at the moment.
Yeah.
But they actually give a date that by 2071 or 2031, is it? We will have a baby that's been conceived and grown outside the human body. And then you'll just, I mean, it's just a nightmare scenario of like the Matrix. Remember the Matrix? So all those fucking things, just,
I saw an article as well this week in one of the major papers. I'll have to try and bring it up.
to get the details, but it was basically saying that women who go through, who decide that they want to be men and go through the operation and the sex change business, they should still be entitled to have babies if they want to.
No, it's worse than that. It's going to happen in 3 years' time.
Well, didn't
that, already one.
Didn't that woman already do?
But
well, they should be able to. I can't remember what it was. Steve's just getting it up now. But something about that they should be allowed to, I don't know, keep their eggs or have right to. I just find it so mind-boggling.
But the worst part is, it's like, I mean, the headline is "Sex Change Men on the Brink of Having Babies Following NHS Treatment."
That way, right? Okay.
Fucking. It says
women having sex changes on the NHS are being given free fertility treatment so they can have children after becoming men. I know. Get your head around that.
Why don't they just be
at least three British men who were born female are on the brink of becoming parents using fertility techniques, leading experts has said. In most cases.
Well, they stop short of tying the knot in the womb as a sort of so there's a way back. For instance, they have a second thought.
Well, it says here that what they're doing, in most cases, eggs are being frozen. So what they do is they harvest the eggs and freeze them at NHS clinics before surgery or hormone therapy, so they can later be implanted into a surrogate mother. So it won't actually be the woman who has had, female who has had the sex change. In rare circumstances, the man could become pregnant and give birth if they kept their female reproductive organs, as happened in 2008 in Honolulu.
If a woman is having sex change to be a man, then she's probably going to get with the lady,
Yeah.
So. Why doesn't whoever she gets with have the baby? Because she is actually still a woman.
She's got all the bits that are necessary.
Right. And the other one would have gone to Sweden for the adidectomy surgery. and so how come I've just got these images of those old butt flap pajamas in my head? I don't know, man. This is really uncomfortable. I'm going to have to stand up and move around a little bit.
That's exactly how I felt.
There was a report a couple of weeks ago of some company wanting to find a willing volunteer lady to have a clone embryo of a Neanderthal embedded, so she can become pregnant with a Neanderthal baby.
Oh!
That was quite some years ago, though. They found a guy frozen in ice, didn't they? Scandinavia sort of way, and some of his sperm was still intact, and there was a fucking queue of women saying, "I'll have the baby."
Well, maybe. maybe now that the
was your mum once, Steve.
Your mum was. that wasn't so long. That was like the late 90s or the early 2000s. Because it was all very Jurassic Park-esque, the sort of science of it all, sort of like removing the sperm from the... there was only about two or three left out of the bazillions that the knock is down there. There's only a couple.
Well, maybe now...
Well, they've got to make new MPs some way, haven't they?
Maybe now, with the cloning technology being that much better, they've had another crack at the whip.
Yeah.
And they're just trying to distract the attention from the mummies, aren't they?
Yes, completely.
I was just about to say, what about Barack Obama? And our good old Freeman's. It's got a bit quiet now, isn't it?
Okay, so...
How about a story about natural women with natural lady parts? Would that be welcome?
Having a baby.
Yeah, they're beautiful. Go for it.
No, nothing yeah. about babies. Natural women, their baby parts, and a new discovery of law here in the U.S. Headline. Oh, wait. We need the bomb.
Bomb.
There we go. Taking upskirt pictures is not a crime in a U.S. state after a bizarre ruling. Everyone know what upskirt pictures are?
What, when you put your phone down to take a picture up someone's skirt?
Correct.
I'm guessing.
Ding, ding, ding! You win a prize. Remind me
the clue
time.
Was in the okay. name.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a funny variation of a selfie you could use there.
Once upon a time, men wore patent leather shoes with little mirrors on the toes, so when they danced, yeah. they could get that upskirt. Anyway, the bizarre ruling followed the case of Brandon Lee Gary, who in June took pictures up the skirt of a woman as she shopped in the store where he worked. The vile practice of upskirting, where someone secretly holds a camera or mobile phone under a victim's skirt to get a picture of their underwear, or lack thereof, has been declared effectively legal. The bizarre ruling followed the case. According to court records, the woman first noticed Mr. Gary bending down behind her as if he was tying his shoes. Later, in another aisle, the woman grabbed an item off a shelf and turned to see him bending down with his cell phone out. She complained to the store manager, and security camera footage from the Publix, P-U-B-L-I-X, store in Houston County, Georgia, showed Mr. Gary place his phone underneath the woman's skirt at least four times while she shopped. He was later charged and convicted on invasion of privacy and sentenced to 5 years probation. But in a decision made last week, the State Court of Appeals threw out the conviction, finding that no law in Georgia criminalizes the, quote, reprehensible, unquote, conduct. Judge Elizabeth Branch wrote, quote, in closing, we note it is regrettable that no law currently exists which criminalizes this reprehensible conduct. Unfortunately, there is a gap in Georgia's criminal statutory scheme in that our law does not reach all of the disturbing conduct that has been made possible by ever-advancing technology. The remedy for this problem, however, lies with the General Assembly, not with this court. Judge Amanda Mercier, joined by Judges Herbert Phipps and John Ellington, disagreed on the verdict. She said, quote, the activity recorded in this case was the activity of the private areas of the victim's body covered by clothing while she walked and shopped. As the victim's genital area was not exposed to the public, it was out of public view, and the victim had a reasonable expectation of privacy in the area under her skirt. End quote. State Representative Rich Golick go lick, that's funny, who chairs the House Judiciary, non-civil. I read this whole story just to do that bit right there. Said he would welcome a proposal to change the law. State Representative Golick told the Atlanta Constitution Journal, quote, "I think our constituents certainly see awful conduct like this as an invasion of privacy. And if we need to update the law to reflect that, then that's certainly what we will do." End quote. The end.
Surely the biggest punishment of that would be getting found out that you're being a fucking perv and everybody laughing at you. Because what's the harm of looking
Well, yeah, but then everyone will want to join your Facebook group.
It's like taking pictures of lady doing toilet.
Well, it's not, is it?
Upskirts are us.
Yeah, no, but do you remember that in, what was that film? Borat or something. And one of his hobbies was taking pictures of ladies using the toilet, like putting his camera over the top.
No, that's proper right. Invasive. That's because I hate anime. I can't go if someone's watching me. But yeah, I mean, that's it's hardly a fucking crime, though, is it?
Well,
or am I being a bit Trump here?
I'm curious what Fi has to say on this.
Taking pictures of
always wear pants. So
surely, so it's an invasion of privacy. Surely.
Do you wear skirts, Fi?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to think that some guy could just kind of walk along beside me and kind of bend down with his phone kind of at the right angle and just go, I'll just see what I can get a picture of there. I wouldn't really feel comfortable with that. Especially,
would
you
be happy if you found out it was completely legal for someone to do that?
No, I don't think I'd be very... you know, to be honest... It's not something that I've had to worry about.
Or is it?
Well, I don't know. There may be pictures of an underskirt picture of me somewhere in the world. I don't know. But
that's probably
Steve. If you lie on the beach in a bikini or a swimsuit,
exactly,
then it's kind of similar. But I suppose for some people, it's the kind of pervy thing that it's the unknown, isn't
it? It's the chase. It's the thrill of the chase.
And, you know, might depend on the age of the person.
All I'm saying
as
is,
well.
on the scale of sex offences, it's pretty fucking...
uncomfortable. If I were wearing a top that were a little bit kind of... kind of pushing my bosoms forward sort of thing and little bit cleavagey, then I wouldn't feel comfortable with someone just coming up and taking a picture just of my cleavage. You know, it's like, you know, even if I, you know, someone coming up and taking a picture just of my ear, if they had an ear fetish or something, yeah, I just wouldn't feel comfortable with people coming up to taking pictures of.
Well, can tell you 100% authentically, this Swami will not wear the robe in Georgia.
I think you might tell with that beard, though.
I suggest if you're going to be wearing skirts that are short, perhaps wearing a pair of underwear with a giant mouth on them. That would keep
people out. Well, no one wants to see my bloomers, I'm pretty sure.
Well,
yeah, there was a reason they used to wear those big long things with frills around the edges.
1930s.
Did you see the story of the guy in Glasgow got sent down for making shatter? He was making like honey hemp oil, which then it's like a crystalline form of weed.
Yeah.
and he blew out his flat, and he's been sent down for 6 years. I think more because of the criminal damage rather than actual
Stop watching, Michael. They haven't fucking busted anybody yet. But in the States, I believe they call it dabs, Swami. Are you familiar with that? And it's basically...
Lisa would probably know more about that.
It's basically a kilo to 10 grams or whatever. It's mega concentrated. And you heat walnut and you fucking stick it in a glass straw, and the hit is meant to just be like, well,
a bit like high fructose corn syrup.
I'm not too sure. I'm gonna be like, because it's 50 quid a gram over here. Ooh, so I've been sort of not offered some, but I've been told somebody can get some who knows somebody. You basically got to do a kilo of weed to get like a substantial amount. It's manufactured using propane. So how the hell it's made? Oh, it sounds pretty dodge.
Well, that was one of the issues around the Rick Simpson thing, wasn't it? That the process of it is actually...
Yeah, but that's naked flame he uses. It's not. It's a different.
And I think when this story broke, when they actually, it actually occurred rather than now, I'm sure it was reported as he was trying to make hemp oil. Yeah. So and,
really?
and on the radio news this morning, they said hemp oil, but looking actually at the article, it's this shatter stuff. So the blur in the lines in
making oil's nowhere near as deadly as or dangerous as making shatter is.
No, because I mean
somebody explained to me the other day how it's done.
A form of distillation. You use sort of like solvents and things, don't you?
You use propane. You select with propane, so it's got to be done.
Yeah, for this shatter stuff, yeah. But for the Rick Simpson oil, it's a form of distillation, I think.
Yeah, well, you can do it. You can do it with just water. You can do it in a sort of bain-marie sort of setup. Have you seen that video?
No.
So that can be done relatively safely, because the way Rick does it is pretty dangerous. You've got to like be fucking on your toes with it. And so, because he does it with alcohol.
Yeah.
There is a way to do it with water. I actually found a load of amazing articles I should sort of talk about sometime. With making hemp coconut oil. And amazing, and it's like it doesn't get you stoned or nothing, but it's really medicinal. It's really just coconut oil plus hemp sounds like a winner, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So you can actually use it together. I'll dig them out and report on it. Mm. On another edition of the Bomb, Type One Radio Lounge at type1.com. Stay that ready, Swami.
Always available.
This Swami. Yeah, really. This Swami has one more news bong story. Just can't wait to get out. You know how we love our robots and such on this show.
Okay, well, here we go.
Headline. 7-Eleven just used a drone to deliver a chicken sandwich and Slurpees. A 7-Eleven customer's order for Slurpees, a chicken sandwich, donuts, hot coffee, and candy will forever go down in history. What makes it remarkable is that the convenience store chain used a drone to deliver the order to a family in Reno, Nevada. The company partnered with drone startup Flirty for the delivery, which the company said was the first time a drone has legally delivered a package to a U.S. resident who placed an order from a retail establishment. But the drone delivery wasn't a casual affair. This delivery required special flight planning, risk analysis, and detailed flight procedures, ensuring residential safety and privacy were equally integrated. Chris Wallach, the director of operations for the Nevada Institute for Autonomous Systems, said in a statement, "The NIAS is a Nevada government-backed nonprofit autonomous vehicle advocacy group that helped oversee the delivery. It took 2 drone flights to deliver all the items ordered," the company said. "The drone flew autonomously for 1 mile from the 7-Eleven store in Reno on July 11th to the family's house using GPS. After the drone reached the house, it hovered above while lowering the container to the family's backyard using a rope. Quote, "The convenience of having access to instant 24/7 drone delivery is priceless," said the delivery's recipient, Michael, who did not share his last name in the corporate statement. Quote, "It's amazing. A flying robot just delivered us food and drinks in a matter of minutes." End quote. Then Michael coughed really hard from the last bong hit. 7-Eleven said it plans to work with Flirty on future drone deliveries, but it did not say when it would roll out a broader drone delivery program for all of its stores. Many companies like Amazon and Google are exploring using drones for delivering packages. But strict Federal Aviation Administration drone regulations have pushed them to do a lot of the testing overseas in countries like the Netherlands and Canada. Although the FAA recently released new commercial drone rules that take effect in August, the rules still don't allow for flying drones at night or outside the line of sight of their operator. Both restrictions could have a huge impact on whether drone deliveries are practical. In March, Flirty made the first federally sanctioned autonomous drone delivery in a U.S. urban area to an abandoned home in Hawthorne, Nevada. The startup also used a drone to deliver medical supplies in rural Virginia last summer, which led to the drone being displayed at the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum. The state of Nevada is one of 6 FAA drone testing sites in the U.S. where universities, companies, and government agencies can more easily test drone services and related technologies. The end. Oh, and this Swami must admit, the part about coughing from the bong hit was made up. The end.
Okay, so
now not only do we have robots that'll kill you, we got drones that'll bring you the munchies. Hooray!
Idiocracy.
Okay, so can we have a bong?
We can have a bong. Here is a bong.
Okay, so here's something that you might be interested in, Swami. Well, it has a vague connection to something you might know, and that is Kota Shawl. Do you recognize that name, Swami?
Oh, press on. I'm all ears. Well, except for my foot.
Okay. In the Eastern Daily Press, which is the local paper for the Norfolk area, there was an article all about how Norfolk now has 1 million solar panels, enough to power 1/5 of all our homes. This is it, just in Norfolk, or just in that, I don't know, maybe it's just that particular area. But I'm reading this now from the website Not a Lot of People Know That, which we've used before. And it's basically talking about issues around global warming, global warming farce. That's the word I'm looking for. So here we have this article in the Eastern Daily Press, which is based in Norfolk, which is the east. Well, obviously, Eastern Daily Press is the eastern part of Great Britain. And they're promoting this whole wonderful solar panel business that's going on here. On this lovely website, he's going into A, the EDP's reporting of such matters, and B, the Cotershall solar farm itself. And he has a little quote from someone leaving a message on the website of the Eastern Daily Press, and it says, "I wonder if EDP is just a propaganda sheet for certain local political people. And I wonder if there is a direct money trail from those people direct to solar projects and subsidy cash." And basically the whole article goes through to prove that there is actually a very direct link to all these things. And so let's go through from... Right, okay, so I'll start from here. Whilst not aware of a specific money trail, there have been some noticeable changes in the EDP over the last few years. So he goes on to talk about how the editor changed in the last few years. In 2012, when the editor Peter Walters decided to leave the business, with the Norwich Evening News editor also stepping to one side, they were widely rumoured behind the scenes disagreements at the time, and it seems likely that the major bust-up occurred, but not what the papers would want to admit. It led to the Ipswich Star editor Nigel Pickover heading up the A140 to become joint editor of both the EDP, which is the what does that stand for? Eastern Daily Press, as I said before, and the NEN, which is the Norwich Evening News. So you have one person now controlling both the newspapers. The editorial offices and printing press are both in Norwich, also home to the UEA and the CRU, that bastion of impartial climate science we are familiar with. And the UEA advertises in the job section of both papers, and many of its press releases are printed verbatim. There may be a good reason for this. One individual, Richard Jewson, that sounds like a building name, doesn't it? Richard Jewson has been on the board of both organisations, as well as having been involved in the outer harbour development of Great Yarmouth, known as Eastport. Now, if you've ever seen this development, it's just it's classic Agenda 21. It's just ridiculous.
Rabbit hutches by the sea.
Well, no, it's the one out at sea. It was supposed to be a port, but right. Well, if I read on, you'll see what the complete farce of it all was. So as well as having been involved in the outer harbour development at Great Yarmouth, well known as Eastport, after failing to win the ferry and freight services it was built for due to unforeseen, in inverted commas, strong currents when vessels entered and exited, it had become...
Oh my God, they couldn't figure that one out.
I know, they built this whole bloody thing, and then they found out that the currents weren't right for the boats coming in and out, and so they couldn't do it. Yeah. Strong current when vessels entered and exited. It had become home to several of the jack-up barges working on North Sea wind farms. Well, that's convenient,
that's
isn't it?
Convenient, yeah.
On top of that, JR, RJ, sorry, Richard Jewson, been managing director of the Family Builders Merchants, who have their own sustainability section. Draw on your own conclusions. So there we go. They're pretty much in the pocket, or the newspaper is pretty much in the pocket of the business, we can see here. So he goes on and gives more information there. I'm going to move on to this bit. RAF Coltishall is a former World War II fighter base, which you know very well, Swami, which then became home to the legendary English Electric Light Cold War jet interceptor, and latterly several Jaguar squadrons. Sadly, it now cuts a rather forlorn view, at least to any aviation enthusiast. After closure in 2006, it stood empty for several years as various plans for redevelopment came and went. Moving Norwich Airport, there was mooted due to the longer runway, but road transport links were too inadequate. One of the major parcel delivery companies expressed interest in keeping the runway and building a new distribution hub, but this also fell by the wayside, as did plans for a business and private aviation base. The fact that the local council has a substantial financial interest in the existing Norwich Airport may have had something to do with this. So they were on about moving Norwich Airport out to Coltishall and using the runway that they had there from the old air base, but obviously other business links meant that they weren't actually going to really seriously go ahead with that. So then 2 years ago, the EDP reported plans to build a giant solar farm on the site. I tipped Paul off and he posted about it here. Okay, so that's just a bit that he's posted there. So anyway, the article goes on. So they built this whole solar farm on the old airbase at Coltishall. But who are involved in it? So the main contractors for the solar farm building are Enerpark GmbA. Anyway, you can see that if you look at that. I'm not going to read that out. That's on the website. Okay, but they're just doing the dirty work. What about Scott Moore Solar or Red Triangle Energy, who were the first name out of the bag? For months after the solar farm proposal was first announced, Norfolk County Council refused to name who they were in talks with, citing commercial secrecy, which is nice when you're dealing with taxpayers' money. Good point. There were plenty of complaints about this on the EDP letters page. I did some digging at the time, and Red Triangle Energy seemed to consist of just three people, all listed as directors. Richard Aitkins has been involved in a dozen telecoms and renewable energy companies, mostly for periods of a couple of years, and Helen Allinson's background is in lettings and property. Tom Durrell's speciality was carrying out energy audits. So you have to wonder what, if any, background checks Norfolk County Council carried out before signing up this bunch. So the article goes on to kind of show that there is, that there haven't been background checks, that there are people with financial interests being allowed to just, move into these positions whereby they can just further benefit their financial positions. And also move ahead with what is an agenda of, the whole green, the green agenda, the so-called, climate change, blah, 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 renewable energies and everything. And so business, certain people within business are being allowed to take the positions to make an awful lot of money from being in certain positions, and we all know that goes on, and he's outlined it here very well, I think. So if anyone wants to have a take a look at that article, it's in Not a Lot of People Know That, And it just caught my eye there, Swami, because it had the Coltishall link on it.
Yep. anyone who...
You know, it's going on everywhere, isn't it?
Yes. I just got an email from Dutch Sense. He's very embarrassed that he wasn't here this week. We'll get him on at some point in the